This is the Brothers Wist, something like number 26, Mike tells me. What is today? It is January 29th? Ah, or I guess for Andrew it's the 30th, so that doesn't count. And we have quite a packed house tonight. We've got Andrew Cox, I'm pointing at him on my screen,
Hello.
all the way from Brisbane. We've got some guy named Justin Miller,
Hi.
all the way from Virginia. And then right next to him is one Mike Hammett, which everybody loves and adores. Pinch those cheeks. And then coming up right next to him is one Tom Smith, all the way from Ireland.
Hello. Sorry. Hi.
And then we have Thomas, the infamous Thomas, because he's got his pirate beard on right now.
Hello, everybody.
All the way from Slovakia. All the way from Slovakia. Fresh off of saving my butt the other day, as usual. And then you've got me, Greg Sowell, over here in the motherland that is Texas. And welcome. So, that's a lot of folks, so it's going to be hard to get anything out. So, these things always take us forever, always take a year for us to get through any of these. So, let's just kick it off and bust right on through. The Microtik newsletter number 70 came out, right? And so, front and center, on the front, right at the top, big picture, is the HAP AC light, right? So, they put it in the newsletter, which means it must be shipping soon. And the claim to fame of this guy is its first dual band integrated router from Microtik. Go.
Yeah,
It's the light version.
the yeah.
I'm waiting for the full version.
I think that's the consensus already. It's like, cool, you've got a light version, we can test it, but can we have the full version?
So what is it? It's like I
Sorry.
think the AC, the 5 gig is single chain, is that right? And then the 802.11 in part is dual chain.
2.4 gigahertz is the
Yeah.
dual chain, 5 gigahertz is only single chain MIMO. But it's a step in the right direction, and it's like what we've all been wanting to see.
Yeah.
So
And you can PoE power it, and then it's got a port that'll pass PoE back out, which is interesting, right? So you can kind of daisy chain these guys together.
And a USB port, and it's $50, so
That's really, really not
it's
bad.
really
650 megahertz CPU, 64 megs of RAM. So it's, I mean, it's got a little kick. You know, you could move a few packets with this thing. I guess what is the equivalent, like a HAP, I guess, or the HAP Lite. It's just with a dual chain.
it's a HAP line, so
Yeah. All right. So you guys, I'm assuming you guys are going to give this thing a go, right?
I'm thinking we're probably going to get one or two of them to test, but I think we personally are holding out for the just regular AC, and they get that dual band 5 gigahertz going, dual
But
chain, sorry.
it has SFP as well. The full HAP AC has SFP port. So.
Oh yeah, that was the other thing we noticed. It's 100 megabit ports. I would have thought maybe if you're using an AC, you'd put gigabit ports on it, but
Not with
the
one
light
chain.
version.
Not with one chain.
Well, but you've got dual chain 2.4.
Yeah, so technically you could still do a little bit more. I don't know. But I guess they assume that it's not really meant to move that much traffic, right? So we're not going to go to that expense. Or maybe that was just a bid to keep the price low, right? $50 is almost a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that they give you one extra port as opposed to the HAP Lite, because I kind of miss that fifth port every now and then. All right, moving right along. They announced some of the Mant boxes, the 15 and 19, which is basically a sector with built-in radios. Does this appeal to any of you guys? I know Tom does a lot of Microtik Wireless, but he's a big Juris fanboy, so he always slaps those antennas on there.
Yeah, no, like I'd be, and the RF elements ones. To be honest, I'm not too fond of the integrated ones because I'm not sure about the quality. That's no disrespect to Microtik, but generally, like when you kind of get the map, get an antenna from an antenna manufacturer, and then get the integrated units, like the net metal boxes are pretty impressive. Or the 800s with the PCI Express cards. That's kind of our preferred thing. The Juros for the point-to-point links, I haven't seen much better than them. We just seem to be able to squeeze an awful lot out of them over a distance, you know. So I'm not a big, just because we've suffered from such interference locally with ourselves that we've actually used a lot of RF armor. And I have to say, I do like the new shield version of the RF elements one. Although the guys in the office are still very fond of the RF armor, so I'm trying to kind of get them to try out the new RF elements ones. I don't know if any of you have tried out those, so but for now, I'm kind of more focused on getting the antennas from an antenna manufacturer and be integrated and get, let's say, like some net metal or the heavy magnetic board behind that. That's just our approach. It's expensive.
I bet Thomas has tried the RF elements ones.
Yes, actually, multiple times.
Any opinion?
They do what they are advertised to do. I actually did a lot of wireless testing and wireless comparisons between various vendors. Admittedly, that was mostly running good RF elements antennas, but they do what they are supposed to do. If you have the right use case, then, you know, it depends on what you need.
Fair enough. Very, very discerning answer. Very diplomatic of you. Nicely done. anybody else have any opinion on any of that?
Tom, which RF elements sectors were you referring to trying to get your guys to use?
It's the one with the, it's either the two chain or the three chain, the basically the long sectors with the
okay, so like
shielding at the side, the kind of the cancellation shielding at the side, which apparently has 35 dB.
It's the carrier class sector antennas.
Like the standard form factor. Yeah, so I've been indirectly using them as I've been using the cambium EPMP sectors on all of my EPMP deployments, and those are almost the same thing. Like RF Elements makes them for cambium. It's the same approximate design. There could be something different, I'm not sure, but
it's close. So actually what's happening with that is that the antenna is, unless I am mistaken, jointly designed by RF Elements and cambium, and RF Elements manufactures it for cambium. Mm-hmm. But again, unless I am mistaken, most of the design, or actually some of the design considerations there were from cambium itself, and yeah, but it is manufactured by RF Elements.
Very interesting. Man with the knowledge. So,
and what's your performance, or have you been happier comparing them to previous generation cambium antennas? What's your experience?
I didn't really use much cambium before, because the EPMP series is the first one that I could afford, because their previous their alternate product line is the Canopy, you know, original series, and that's like $3,000 per AP, and I'd rather not spend that. So, I forget who they OEM'd those from, Pack Wireless, Layer, something like that.
I don't know. I think it could be the Israeli ones, MTI or Mars as well, which have pretty good names for their kit as well, in fairness.
Yeah, I used to use MTI on my Microtik gear before I stopped using Microtik Wireless.
Excellent, excellent. All right, let's keep trucking. They announced the Map Lite. As you guys remember, the maps are the little, pack of playing card size access points, maybe a little bit smaller than that. And of course, Andrew gets all the new cool stuff. What a dick.
It's backwards on my screen. Is it backwards for you guys?
Well, he's in Australia, so.
GAL.
Yeah, and so the map lights are, like, even smaller, right? So what would you say? It's about the size of a matchbook?
Yeah, it's like about 1.5 times the size of a matchbox. So here's something to compare. Like, here's my old GoPro compared to the map.
Yeah.
And it's tiny, like.
I saw you getting really good use out of it, using it as like a refrigerator magnet, right?
Yeah, it's got the magnets actually in the back of the case here. You can't see them from this side, but they're embedded in a plastic case, and they give you one of these little plates with it, with a sticky back, so you can stick it to somewhere, or you can put it on your fridge to hold up your grocery list.
Yeah, yeah. So is that thing, is he PoE?
Yeah, it takes all the way from 10 to 60 volts PoE, or it's got a little USB port you can use for power. So the port's for power only. You can't use it for any sort of additional storage or 3G or anything like that.
That's cool. And then something else interesting I noticed on the bottom of the press release, it says, new version of Router OS will support single radio AP client for repeater support.
Yeah.
So this is would you guys agree this is the first instance where they've, like, in sort of print publication, talked about new version?
Actually, it's already out.
Router OS 7?
No. That would be some news. We would talk about that for hours.
Before RC.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's actually yet another wireless package.
Very fun. I think this is interesting, the radio AP client repeater thing. I'm surprised it took them this long to whip something up. I know it's not really, I guess it's frowned upon by a lot of people, but yeah, Tom's not a big fan of it.
I'm just sure that Mr. Smith is glad that we have yet another wireless implementation to work with MicroTik.
No, I just think they could improve some aspects of the user interface. And I've mentioned it before, I'm not going to labor the point. My good friend John Tully knows. Hi, John.
We need to make a webfix skin for Tom that only has the enable and disable button and the rest just pre-configured.
It's more just the workflow, you know, like
So
turn off the forward point to point links, that type of stuff, automation stuff that, you know. Now, in fairness, they've made certain steps forward, but they can certainly improve it. I think they know it too, you know. Let's not labor the point, but could be a lot more workflow oriented the interface. That's all I'd say. Yeah.
I think it's funny. So in some of their various use cases, they have little pictures, you know, little bubbles. And one of them, they show it stuck to the back of a laptop, I guess using it as sort of like a boost for the signal. I think that's kind of cute. One they have is like slapped to the side of a rack, which I think is actually kind of cool. Because in a data center, you can pay for like an out-of-band management DSL connection or something like that. Or you could maybe just kind of borrow their wireless for a while.
Yeah. So yeah.
I think that's kind of actually a sort of cool use for it there.
I have a question. Like, what do you guys actually see as a use for this sort of device? If you had one of these, would you be carrying it around in your bag, or would you be putting it somewhere where you might not normally be able to put it in access?
Actually,
they can fit in the wall behind something.
The thing that I am disappointed with is that the USB is power only. I basically carry a normal map with me everywhere, because then I can, from my laptop, I can power Raspberry and the map, and it gives you two ports for the laptop and Raspberry, and when you are on a plane, it looks like you're building a bomb because you have all these wires coming from your laptop. And no, it's actually very useful, because if you only have wireless access on the laptop, right, you can't do any wireless client-side bridging, and then the MicroTik map, like, for example, gives you pseudo-bridge and all the different stuff, so you can have GNS running on your laptop and it still works over wireless, which it normally doesn't. So it's quite useful with the normal map. For the map Lite, with only one Ethernet port and no utilization of the USB port, I personally think a normal map is a much better choice, at least for my use cases.
Yeah, I was thinking even if you were trying to do it like a little CPE, the regular maps, you know, you could power it with PoE and then have a port out for the customer, but you sacrifice that now. I have a feeling Andrew's got something on his lips, though.
So here's my thoughts. This is something else I noticed that's a bit weird. Typically, some of the standalone radios things, the default configuration on them has 192.168.88.1 on the Ethernet port, currently these devices actually become set up as like home style installation where there's DHCP on either one. It's broadcasting its own wireless network, so that's the only way you can connect to it initially to reset the config, which I thought was a bit... That, to me, seems a bit silly. Maybe they're targeting it at that sort of... like someone that can just plug it in and have a access point up and running. But if you're trying to configure a whole bunch of these devices, you're going to have to use FlashBig or something instead to get that default config on them. Otherwise, you've got to config, like connect up to each individual network that appears, reset the device.
Is there a button on this thing at all anywhere?
Yeah, there is. Still... There's a little button on the side that's the reset and WPS button. WPS mode and caps. I'm assuming it's like caps, a caps.
Yeah,
so as well.
It still has FlashFig for the first boot, right?
Yeah, it does. So you can do it that way. It just means that, yeah, you have to get every one of these devices out of the box, do a FlashFig to put them back to whatever config you want to work with to then deploy them. So typically we like you can take a device out of the box, put it on site, and you know you can get access to it on one of the Ethernet ports. But that was just a bit frustrating to me to see that every one of them I had to connect up to and reset. And, we've got a bunch of these on order. We'll be bringing to the Slovenian MUM with us as little hotspot in a box deployments.
That's cool. What,
can't you use the wireless CM too, or? Package manager, the wireless manager
Capsman.
Stuff that's in it now? Capsman.
Yeah.
Manage them all?
You probably could. I don't know if the default config allows Capsman to work over the what they flag as the WAN port. So I'll have to try that. I haven't actually had a look into using Capsman with these just yet. You notice like things like the metal. It'll have the Ethernet port as what's got the IP address on it, whereas these, it's the wireless, so FlashFig to get them configured initially.
They have Roman configured on the Ethernet port? You could just not have an IP on it.
Yeah, I'll check that.
Do you guys notice, I don't know, like as I got the first map, I think, you know, when they released it, was it in America they gave the maps away?
Yeah.
And one thing I noticed is that I think they use a RAM disk for the storage, so every time you reboot, you lose any files in the file system,
You have to move them into that flash folder.
Pardon?
You have to move them into that flash folder.
Ah, right, cool.
It's the HAP Lite is also the same way. And I figure these will probably be the same way as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just like a little bit more
RAM. Like it's when you download and drop a new firmware or something, a new version of router OS, it loads in that root partition. If you reboot without doing an upgrade or something, then that's cleared on boot. So.
Interesting. I had a few, you know, when you're doing scans or, like, I was using it for wireless pen testing. And I had, you know, taken down notes and stuff, and went, "Ah, yeah, I'll get it." And then I managed to unplug the USB port, and I was like, "Ah, no!" And then it was like, "Oh, it's on the file system." No, it's not. Nah. So I learned it the hard way. But in fairness, it is very compact. Even the map, as my good friend there, Tom, was saying, you know, with more ports, I was actually very happy with that. I think it's a nice... It is insanely small. I don't know what sort of antenna coverage does it have, guys, who have tried it out? How does it compare to the maps?
I haven't tried the new one, but I know the map had fairly good coverage. I was really surprised when you pop them open and the antenna's the only size of a quarter. You know, it's pretty surprising.
Actually, the normal maps are also really good if you are doing hotels and you want to do access point per room in a hotel. It's very good that way, definitely. And you can daisy chain them and do all kinds of fancy things. And
it's very low barrier to entry with these sort of things. And they're dual chain as well. So it's got, I posted a couple of photos of the internals the other day. It's the same as the new map.
Does anyone know how it compares to the Air Gateway from Ubiquiti?
No.
Never used one.
I actually have one of those sitting on a desk somewhere for about 2 years now that I've never even opened. Maybe now would be the time.
And I like the air gateway a lot better than anything MikroTik has up to this point.
Is that for like the ease of use for end users sort of thing?
Well, well, for one, the air gateway, the LR version comes within an external antenna, so you can actually go beyond your desk with it. And two, with the way it clips into the PoE injector and then comes with a bracket so that it looks like it's one complete unit that you put power into, you know, optional internal wireless into, and then PoE out to your CPE. Mm-hmm. It's just one unit that does all of that.
How do you unclip that, Mike? Just out of interest, like I'm looking at the pictures of it and it clips in with the other one, but that seems to me to be like something that would kind of just come apart on its own. Because it doesn't have an individual.
There's a little plastic bracket that comes with it, and you set the PoE in here, and then the air gate, of course I'm not on the screen, PoE goes here, air gateway goes here in this plastic bracket, and then that plastic bracket also has like mounting points, so it can be mounted.
Okay.
That's cool.
What does the air gateway do? Sorry, pardon my ignorance, but
it does local wireless for like you have your you know, power beam outside the house, cable comes inside, goes through the PoE, and the air gateway attaches onto the PoE, does inside wireless, can do routing and NAT if necessary. It's
nice. Okay.
Your home router attached to it, and actually, if the air gateway is plugged into a Ubiquiti PoE with a Ubiquiti CPE outside, on the management page, it will alert you that there's an air gateway on the other side, and you can then manage the air gateway, or vice versa, one or the other. I forget which one it is. But, you know, you can manage one device from the other device without having to do anything.
Cool. That's cool. All right, so would we beat that one up? You ready to move on?
Yep.
Excellent. So the last thing they have on page 4 is the CCR1009BG 1S PC, which is basically CCR1009 that doesn't have any fans, right? So it's all passive cooling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm a fan of it.
And it has 10 gig.
Are you a fan of that?
Ugh, you're killing me, brother. This is what the PC designation means, passive cooling, right? So it has the default one has one SFP port, and as somebody pointed out, the Plus version has an SFP Plus for 10 gig. That's going to be, what is that, nine copper ports, and then you get one SFP or SFP Plus port. But that's cool. So I guess you can put it in more sensitive areas, ones that you're worried about noise or you don't want any failed components. If it's up on a mountain or something like that, you don't have to worry about it. That's pretty cool.
No, it's good like in like cabinets where you don't have, where you have less than solar power and you don't want to be wasting just circulating air or in a closed cabinet, you know. Anyone have experience with the 9-core? How does it perform compared to the other multi-core Solaris?
I've been using them in a couple of locations as like an entry level sort of CCR, and just as an observation, it feels like the RB1100 is going to be phased out. Like the CCR is dropped so much in price, like at that 9-core version.
Yeah,
the RB1100 used to be pretty much the same price that is, and I don't see a need for like the 1100 in the future when we have the CCRs there. It just seems to be that, they could phase it out now and nothing would be lost.
The 3011 is also snapping at the heels of the 1100 as well, and it's roughly, half the price, two-thirds the price, similar power usage. That's the one thing about the cloud core is that they are heavy in juice, let's say, on a DC backup site compared to the 1100s or the, you know, the 3011s. But I think the ARM processor one, for the price, like, I mean, it's significantly cheaper than, you know, I think it's the PowerPC platform seems to be squeezed from the bottom end with the ARM and obviously from the mid end from the Telera ones as well.
The 1009 they just released, its street price they're saying is $425. So it's really inexpensive.
Yeah, so at the moment, like, the 1100 is sitting at, what is it, like, $350, but then the 3011 is $180. Like, it's kind of still in the middle there in price, but jumping from one of those to the other, like, I don't see much of a need for that 1100. Unless you're doing something specifically that requires the
encryption.
Encryption processing and things, but seems to me it's
as you say, even then, does the offload capabilities of the 1100 supplant the power that 9 Telera cores will give you?
Yeah.
I don't know.
With the price drops and everything, the CCR1006 has been completely phased out as well now, so...
The 1009 also has hardware acceleration. Looking at the block diagram.
So the point I was looking at, like, if you're coming from below with the 3011, like 3011, yeah, is that going to do the work that the 1100 can do?
We're trialing it out for that purpose.
What I am disappointed is that they promised hardware acceleration support for the 850 GX, and so far that hasn't come yet, so...
It's too bad that Alex isn't here to provide his input on the MicroTik hardware encryption and how well that performs.
Has he been doing more of it lately?
He's been working with support for a month or two.
That's right. Yeah, he's been supplying copious amounts of evidence and just very patiently. I mean, you guys know Alex, very patiently, furious. but I think he finally got some satisfaction. So they're finally making some way. So just for example, I'm trying to come up with some street price on the 800s that Thomas was talking about. You know, because it's like one thing's nipping at the heels of everything, but just, you know, price wise, how does all this stuff line up, right? So the 1100. So what is it? The old version where the 2011s and those things are running $120. The 3011, those are about $180. The 1100 AHX2 is about $350, right? So if the 3011 can almost perform what the 1100 can in some scenarios, I guess, I mean, that's almost half the price.
There's another distinguishing feature for the 3011, which makes it really bite at the heels, is that there's 2 gigabits between the 5. So each, you know, there's 2 pairs or 2 5-group switches.
Switch.
2 gigabits to each one from the CPU. In fairness, their hardware engineers did a pretty smart job where if you activate the SFP, there's some sort of XR thing, which basically means that 1 gig gets dedicated to the XFP and 1 gig only goes to the second group of 5 ports. So in ways, if you're doing software routing, I would imagine that the 3011 in certain instances will outperform the 1100s just by the block, just going by the block diagram alone, because the 1100 only has 1 gig to each of the 5 port switch port groups. The other thing, though, that will keep the 1100 alive for now is people with DC sensitive, power sensitive sites, where you'd have, like, I have to say, I'm impressed with MakerTik now being more proactive with the the block diagram, so that people can utilize the hardware in a better way and not find out the hard way that some ports are stucky or not, you know, that kind of way. So yeah, at least you know to utilize a 3011 with three ports, probably the most effective way is, or four ports, is two ports in, you know, one and two, another port in six and seven, or if you need to use an SFP, use SFP one, use one and two, and then just six,
right.
And then you're good. You've actually the most optimal distribution of ports for that.
On the 1100 too, isn't it best practice not to use the last three copper ports on this guy?
Just the last two.
The last two.
Just the last two. Sorry, I actually used to say it was the last three, but then when you look at the diagram, the other one goes directly into the CPU, so you don't have that driver issue.
Okay, so Thomas earlier was talking about the 850, the 850 GX2, right? And those guys are $129, so that's a dual core 533. Hey, Thomas, well, I mean, it does have 512 megs of RAM, right? So it's got a lot of RAM too. So,
why I like the 850? One second, let me get my 850s.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, because the 850 is pretty close in price to the 3011, so why would you use the 850 over the 3011?
What we do with 850s is actually this. I don't know if you guys can see it, but this is two 850s in one U enclosure. So you actually have two routers, two 850s side by side in one U. You power it redundantly because there is a power check, port plug, whatever, out bag, and then you of course power it over PoE to have redundant power. And I really like this because it's for a fairly good price. Under the price of an 1100 AH2, you actually have two redundant routers in one U with the enclosure and everything else. And I really like this because, so there is two things which prevent this from being really awesome. Is that one, the 850 GX2 doesn't have IPsec acceleration support or AES hardware offloading, and the second is that, to my very sadness, the 850s do not support FastPath. So if those two things were fixed, this would be like my favorite thing to deploy, but currently they are not.
Tom, what's the layer 2 M2 off the top of your head, or do you know just on those, are they pretty good, or...?
I think off top of my head it's under 1600 actually, but that's enough for like 95% of usages. So like MPLS, VPLS, PPPoE inside the VPLS you can easily do on these things.
Okay, cool.
That was an impressive set of acronyms really quickly. Just want you to know that wasn't lost on me. Nice, nicely done. All right, so, and it's crazy, it's almost like, I feel like MikroTik's almost in like the race to zero where they start paying you to take their hardware because it's just getting so cheap, you know? It's at what point will we need, you know, I mean, it's almost like they're about to make a router and just call it the router. They don't need any numbers associated with it, right? So it's so cheap and so powerful, you know, you don't need anything else and you just go with it.
I'm fairly certain that if they only had one router, it would still be 16 characters long of seemingly random numbers.
Don't say that to Giannis. He gets awful upset. He comes up with those acronyms, or so he tells us. But,
Actually, the MikroTik, I personally find that the MikroTik naming scheme is very good as opposed to other vendors. But, yeah. Because you just... naming scheme, you just look at those numbers and letters and you know exactly what the router is.
Thomas, right. You're secretly doing this to give Giannis a hard time and you're totally ruining it.
Once they released that wiki document, though, that made it like pretty clear as to how everything worked.
Yeah, it did.
The only thing I have to say about naming conventions, though, guys, is if you have to explain it, you're already losing. Like, it's not like... can you imagine... a randomer just walking in the shop, can I order the CCR? And then someone goes, you know, they're trying to upsell them. Do you want fries with that? They kind of go, do you want the 2 plus, the PC, PC plus, the blue, blue? And you're just like, oh, Jesus, you know. And then the other person walks out of the shop confused. Like, I think I prefer to kind of name products after their favorite customers.
Well,
he named the PoE inserter that only does 100 megs after me, and then he'd name... probably the CCR 1072 after Andrew Trift probably would get that price.
Yeah, he's a dick.
CHR, I'd like that to be named after me because I do feel like pushed them in that direction for a long time. I don't know if they were listening to me. I don't know if they knew that I was pushing them in that direction because I'm pretty sure John would have said, fuck that, we're not doing it. But hi John. I'd say I actually like the CHR, but the pricing, I still think the pricing is too cheap on the CHR for good support. To try and build a support, better support. But to be fair to MakerTik, that all said, when MakerTik acknowledge there's an issue, the support team are very proactive and they do work with you. Yeah. In fairness, Alex, like, while he has been to and fro with them, it's very rare that you get that with a vendor of that price range that does it. Like, I mean, yeah. While I like TP-Link switches and all that type of stuff, sometimes the ordering, the support can be, do you want chicken balls and chips with that support ticket? It's like bringing a local Chinese. You don't quite have the language down. I don't know. What's your experience with other vendors and support, to be fair? Now, sometimes they do too much of, no, that doesn't make any sense, we're not doing it. And that wrecks my head when they don't quite get what I'm trying to say. But when they do get what I'm saying, they kind of say, we'll consider it, we'll work on it at some stage.
I think they never get it. They just started learning that makes you go away if they say that.
But sometimes there was one thing when I was talking about the wireless interface, there was to and fro, and eventually they just said, we'll take your things into consideration. And I think that was literally like someone just more senior just said, look, stop. He's never going to leave this bone alone. Stop trying to justify because he'll never. Because every time they reply to a mail, go, we do because of this, I go, but that doesn't make sense because this. So I think eventually they just said, we'll take it into consideration.
One other thing that popped in my head when we were talking about this is about the naming scheme. I believe they said, like, the HAP series, though the model of the board's actually going to change, they'll still just call it, like, the HAP or the HAP Lite, right? And so it just, whatever the new generation is will happen to be called the HAP or the HAP Lite, which I think is nice because, honestly, it's getting to the point where the performance of these models, kind of in these chains is so close that I don't care that it's a slightly different generation.
Mm. But they still have the normal MikroTik model numbers. They just mm-hmm. don't.
Yeah. You just don't have to reference them by that anymore. You always know if you order the HAP, it's always going to be the newest version of whatever that sort of board is, right?
It's always going to be the version that the distributor has in stock.
There you go.
That's always fine so long as they're not removing features. Like we had issue with Cisco/Lynx this a number of years ago where they had the same model number on everything, and halfway through a shipment there was like old version, new version, they removed features and things. That's when it becomes a problem. If the same feature set is supported, they're just doing interim sort of updates to the hardware, no worries. But it's when they don't advertise that sort of thing, that's when you run into issues.
Now, when you were running DWRT on the Lexus, what was that famous one that then they said, go to version 4 of the hardware? What was that?
WRT 54G or something?
Yeah.
Then after a certain version, nope.
And we're done. All right, so let's hit a couple of other big points. One is somebody mentioned that MikroTik just recently gave like $1 million to a children's hospital, right? And from what I understand, they did that the year before too, like St. Jude.
Well, that's pretty good.
Totally legit. That's awesome. But I know for a fact that like Ubiquiti, they dump a lot of money into a lot of communities, especially like Memphis where, man, those guys need money. So I think they're just a little bit quieter about it, which I think actually is kind of pretty cool. Let's see some of the other stuff people wanted. Oh, while we're talking about hardware, Ubiquiti, and I mentioned Ubiquiti, they announced a new 10 gig switch, correct? You guys know a lot more about this guy. I think he's coming in about $450 bucks. And what are the details on that thing? Mike, I think you're muted.
Yes, I am. From what I've gathered from public sources is that it has 12 SFP plus ports, 4 auto 1 or 10 gig copper ports, And yes, I believe it's somewhere south of $500.
Yeah, that's, I want to say it was sub 500. So 12 SFP plus ports. Is there any indication of how much the backplane can actually support?
I don't know as if that information was available, but I switched in 10 years that wasn't line rate backplane.
Right. I just know for less than $400 or less than $500, 12 SFP, is it really going to push line rate that centrally? But again, it's only switching, right? So it's easier to do that just layer 2 than it is layer 3 trying to actually route through a device. So do you know if these guys are shipping yet or anywhere close to it?
The screenshot that I saw was from Streakwave. And I believe I could have purchased one. I wouldn't have used it anytime soon, so I didn't bother.
Yeah, fair enough.
Do you know the chipset manufacturer? Is it a Broadcom, Marvel?
From what I understand, it's something similar to the Broadcom, like their FastPath family or whatever that's called. I'm trying to scroll my information here and. Unfortunately, I talk too much to too many people to have anything useful. It doesn't sound like it's anything like completely revolutionary. You know, they just kind of took something that's out there and yeah, the MSRP $219.
Are you serious? $219?
That's what it was on Streakwave site.
How is that possible, man? That's insane.
And I think I actually had it. I think I had it for maybe 180, something like that. I was kind of kicking myself for taking Tom's recommendation at the, I guess about anything.
Yeah, I was about to say you could just stop there.
I bought that. I think it was a 12 port TP link. I haven't deployed it yet. It's still sitting there, and. And now this guy comes out for a comparable price, and I'm like, I wish I hadn't done that.
Well, what's the command line like on the Ubiquiti switches? Like, are they like iOS-esque, or are they more like streams? Or
so I actually have. I bought an ETH switch, so it's the same series, but this is a 24-port PoE, so it's ES24250. And I am liking it so far, actually. And I am very picky about my switches. We usually deploy HP switches because all the other vendors have just so many bugs, it's ridiculous. And there was a time when we actually returned 4 really expensive Zyxel supposedly data center grade switches because of bugs. And so I bought one of the Edge switches, and so far I'm actually quite happy. So yeah, like Mike said, it's nothing revolutionary, or was it you, Greg? It's nothing revolutionary, but it's at a really good price.
What about the command line? What's that like? Is it like interface gigabit 1/0 slash?
If I figure out how to switch Hangouts to show you my screen, I can show you.
I've got some deployed at some hotels, and they're fine. They work great. I programmed them through command line, so it's very Cisco-like, but the VLAN setup was a little awkward, but then they did a new version and they made it more Cisco-like. So.
Cool.
Yeah, I've found that even though I think a switch OS might be Cisco-like, I get somebody that has used a Cisco and they're like, they have no idea what they're even looking at. So apparently there's varying levels of Cisco-like depending upon how much other stuff you use that's not even close. To me, I don't really care what it's like. As long as the information's there and it's tab complete, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, tab complete. I don't know what we'd do without it.
Savage.
The only thing about the Ubiquiti switches, the Edge switches that I haven't liked so far, and I'm subject to correction, maybe they've revised the hardware, is the lack of line rate ability. You know, that some of them are not full line, non-blocking in terms of the, you know, the number of ports. You know, it's not like if it's a 48 port, it's not like giving you 96 gigabits, or there's 48 ports plus four, not giving you the 104 gigabit throughput, you know, on the backplane. That's, or I don't know, have you run into issues with that or blocking issues with the switches?
Yeah, I'm just curious if what you're doing that you're running 48 port switches full line rate.
No, but it's just not, that's a fair point. I don't want to be looking at a situation where is it the switch that's doing it, or you want to have confidence that if you're lashing the data in on one port, that on any other port that demands that data, that it's going to get through and not get blocked. You know, that kind of way, because you don't, you know, it's not exactly an obvious place to look, or certainly that's why I'm a bit of a, what do you call it, fundamentalist when it comes to line rate. Like,
I see video on demand services as being something that's like quite easily can take up that usage, especially if you've got like we have a number of sites I work with where they actually have a box on the site, so straight away with any sort of high definition content you can be pushing upwards of 100 meg, and if you don't have that line rate capacity, it causes problems. So
fair enough.
That while we're on the switching conversation, I shared a link on the Facebook page a couple days ago where IgniteNet has some new switches coming out as well. They're not quite that 219 that is the list price for the Ubiquiti one, but there were sub $500, I think. All the information's up there. I can't remember what it is, but I think there's like 24 SFPs, and four or 20 SFPs and four SFP pluses for sub 500.
That's impressive. Very impressive.
From what I gather, it's not even revolutionary, hardware. It's they're owned by a company that manufactures things for other companies, so they just kind of took something they're making for somebody else and said, here, you guys use it. And, they put, their spin on the GUI and, added some cloud management features and said, okay, here you go. That said, I probably wouldn't have bought it if it was the other company, but now it's IgniteNet, something that's working with our space, I'd be more inclined to buy that, just because I know about it. They support our organization, so.
When will they release it? Like, and do we add another year onto the release date for the real release date, as for a particular product for a while? Sorry, yeah,
it's not quite a year, but I think Alex has gotten some of his Metrolink 60s. I know the Miller's waiting on like 50 links.
I'm very sour about that because we went to their website and did the pre-order on the website, and then when stuff starts shipping, we're like, hey, what's going on? They're like, well, you got to go pre-order with Double Radius or whoever. We're like, so now we're at the end of the line after we just jumped on your website and, did a massive pre-order? I mean, what the hell, guys?
I think it's that you're just not very intimidating. Because that, that did nothing for me right there.
Yeah, you seem like really nice. Like, it's kind of like a really nice guy is angry at me. Oh, well.
Well, it's actually Scott that was pissed off at him, so.
You need to go on around, shake your head, hands flailing. What the? Sorry.
Yeah, there you go. It's getting wild in there. Yeah.
Flipping tables.
It's okay now. Okay.
If you need a moment to clean up your tea, let us know.
But I guess moving on while Tom cleans up his house.
Yeah. While Tom wipes up. All right. So we've been rocking it for a while now. Where are we at? I just want to make sure that we got this in a manageable chunk. We've been going about 50 minutes. So let's pick one more topic, kill that, and then cut the stream. What do you guys want to talk about? Open free space.
Upcoming conferences?
That'll work. Let's see, April? Or no. When's the... What month are you going to, Andrew?
The one in Slovenia.
February.
Yeah, February. February 25th and 26th, I think it is. I should know that. I've just got my flights booked before.
Yeah. So everybody's definitely encouraged to go and introduce yourself to Andrew, shake his hand, marvel, bask in his Australian accent.
Just get there and be like, "G'day, mate." And everyone will be like, is that English?
Yeah, so Andrew's going to be hawking some new wares at this one, so definitely drop by and check out what he's got to sell. It's going to be pretty awesome.
The UI looks pretty cool.
Yeah, so what else? Mike, you got some stuff coming up, right?
Yeah, well, there's the WISP America. That's March, I think, 15th through 17th in Louisville, Kentucky. And then I think I might have a couple more conferences after that, too.
There's a MUM coming up in April 23rd in Texas, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be up in Dallas. I'm going to be there.
Catch you guys at that one, too.
Andrew's going to be there.
Well, if everybody's going to go, I guess I should probably go.
Well, yeah, like you did last year, asshole.
I'm pretty sure I said from the beginning that I didn't think I was going to be there. So.
I know, but you're still...
That's the.
What are you getting married by? Is that going to like fit in with the plan? Is that going to be a honeymoon? Comes the mom?
Well, actually, what we're planning. Well, I have to leave WISP America as soon as it's over and drive home because my wedding is that weekend. And then.
You're a brave man.
Bachelor party, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say. I guess WISP America is your best. So, are you going to take? Like Jim, you gotta take Jim out, pink hat, go to the strip club, see what happens.
Yeah. For Vegas, we're actually gonna fly out to California, spend like a week going through stuff in California before Wispapalooza in Vegas, and then she'll be there for Vegas for a week as well. So that's kind of when we're doing our honeymoon thing.
Yeah. So, Mike, you're getting married in March, and Andrew Cox here just got married in December, so big congrats to both of you fellas.
I should tell you guys a story. I had the worst groomsman ever. Some American guy just showed up, got really drunk, trashed the place. Oh, wait, sorry. Great. No, it was really good. It was really good. Thanks to... Greg for making his way over and bringing Christy along.
Yeah, so. It was pretty brilliant. It's one of the best trips I've ever had. So it was definitely worth going to Australia. It's just hard to come back. I was thinking about just sending the kids a ticket and telling them to come and meet us there. It was going to be pretty awesome. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to be at the Dallas MUM as well. Any of you other guys? I'm pointing at you, Tom.
Me?
Yeah, you going to Dallas?
I think I'll probably make my way to Dallas. I won't be making my way to Slovenia. It's just there's a lot on. I'd like to go to Slovenia. My good friend there, Sasha,
Tom's not allowed in the country.
I know. I haven't dirt to my bib there, or anywhere for that matter. But no, I'd like to. I hope to get to WISP America as well. We'll see what the story is. I like the Yanks, and also the people who lost the war down in the south.
It was the Alamo.
We still remember it, though, so it's okay. All right. So how about you, Thomas? You got anything coming up?
Not really. I don't think I'll be going to Slovenia either. And I would come to Texas if somebody buys me a plane ticket, then I'm there, but I don't think that's going
to
happen.
Well,
so.
How much do we have to raise?
Crowdfunding, here we go.
Yeah, we'll make a GoFundMe right now.
Yeah, that's something that you gotta go GoFundMe.
All right, cool. So I guess this is probably as good a place as any. Usually towards the end of this thing, we kind of ask everybody what you're looking forward to in the near future, kind of what you got coming up. So Mr. Cox, what would you say the interesting thing you're looking forward to in the near future is?
We're getting a whole bunch of stuff ready for presentation tomorrow. I didn't make it in to actually get a proper presentation there, but we've got some really cool stuff going on with like residential tower internet management. So the platform that I'm working on is basically managing all of the MikroTik routers, user accounts, and then it's just got so many plug and play options we're building in. So if you're providing it at a school or something, you want content filtering, that's just a click. Yep, it's on. You can now pick the filtering. If you want to provide free wires and integrate with MailChimp, click that, put in your MailChimp account details, you've got it there. We've just started working on like Stripe integration and things as well. So if anyone's got suggestions for popular payment gateways and things, we're putting all those in. We've already had PayPal and things for a while. But yeah, it's a really cool system, and I'm super excited to be working on that with the guys, because we've just come up with some crazy awesome ideas, and it's like, yeah, we can do that. So it's good.
Yeah, I got a firsthand demo of it, and I was blown away. The interface for creating hotspot pages alone is worth it. It's awesome. And then that's now awesome. That they've got you on board, I know it's just gonna like explode, dude. So it's gonna be sick.
You got a pretty face.
Ah. Oh shit. All right, Miller, what do you got cooking? What's coming up in the near future to look forward to?
I'm going to Wisp America. And I don't know about Dallas, but I'm looking forward to actually getting some Ignite radios at some point and getting off the 5 gigahertz bandwagon. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, I guess at this point, 5 gigahertz is really the dead horse everybody keeps beating, right?
Yeah, well, it's all urban, so it's... I did a... it was a one-block shot. Basically 400 feet, and we saw, I think it was 233 access points in 5 gig. So it's just trash.
That's 802.11 based. That's not including anything that's proprietary.
Or a lot of people are running in AC now, so they're just 80 megahertz all over the place. So it's fun. But,
What type of CPEs were you using?
MikroTik SXDs for a lot of that stuff right now, but we're going to have a lot for sale soon.
I mean, you want to try out the Sextans because they're less noisy. Like,
yeah, we've got those two.
I think they're a superior design, to be honest.
I found even the Sextant was not good enough for me, in terms of gain and isolation. It was still kind of it's nice. Moving on.
Yeah, it's all right, Mike. So what do you got coming up in the near future that you're kind of excited about? Obviously, you're supposed to say getting married first.
Yeah, well, however, you know, we've covered that a couple of times in this conversation so far.
I know, but just in case your wife happens to catch a hold of this.
I'm hoping that we have some more of these before that happens. You know, we got 6 weeks. This is our second one in like 3 weeks, so hopefully we can get two or three more before then.
For sure, man. Let's do it.
But no, it's cold outside, so I'm not trying to do much wireless stuff.
I gotcha. It was almost 80 degrees today. It's gonna be 80 degrees for us tomorrow, which is insane.
Yet it's been reasonable. It's been like upper 20s, lower 30s, a week or so. It's better than it could be. It's better than the day that it was negative 10 wind chill and my 3-day-old install of a B5C died. So I'm up on a tower when it's negative 10, changing out a 3-day-old radio. That's nice.
I think you just need to quit complaining, Mike. Suck it up.
I could take you to cement.
Greg, I could fly you up here and have you change out that radio when it's negative 10.
You got it.
Deal. Is that negative 10 Celsius or Fahrenheit?
Fahrenheit.
Oh, that's cold.
All right, Tom, what's coming up in the near future that you're excited about, brother?
Well, Mum's recovering from a lumbar decompression surgery in hospital, so hi, Mum.
That's awesome.
Hi, Tom's mom.
And when you're over in Ireland, I'll introduce it to her, and she's recovering. So it's day 9 after op, so keep it up, ma'am. Other than that, I'm kind of trying to catch up on loads of stuff that I haven't done for the last while that I wanted to do. So just toying around with some open source stuff and realize that I'm a shite programmer. So don't get me for any programming jobs ever, please. That's not my forte. It's kind of realized that I forgot loads of stuff in college, that, and I realized that's why I did engineering and not computer engineering. But other than that, it's all good, you know. So, yeah, over to the next, Thomas.
All right, Thomas, brother, something interesting, something new you got coming up. What is it?
I've got wonderful things that I can't talk about.
So Thomas is this magical butterfly that floats from crazy interesting job to crazy interesting job, and just when he's done climbing that mountain a little bit later, he'll be like, oh yeah, I went and I did this thing. It was okay.
Yeah, and then, you know, for those of you watching that think, like, you know, it's just for show, and then, you know, after the call hangs up, he'll tell us. No, he doesn't. We find out about it publicly, and then, yeah, he tells us, oh, yeah, I did that.
So, yeah, I would really like to tell everyone, but NDAs are NDAs, and I cannot. So, yeah, I've got actually very, very cool projects going on right now, but that's all I can say about it. So, yeah, a lot of nothing, basically.
Well, that's all right, man. Just it's good to have another face on the cast. I mean, we just... Obviously, we don't do this enough, so it's awesome when all you guys get together. Because what time is it over there, Thomas?
It's 3 a.m. and some little change.
Yeah, there you go. All right, well, it's 8 in the afternoon for me, so it's not, yeah, no big deal, man. So that's awesome. I'm glad you're just awake at this point. Let's see, so what do I have going? I just got done doing 2 lynda.com courses, and I thought I was going to die. There's a lot of stuff to compress. So I happened to go on this trip to Australia that ended up where I had to write most of 2 courses in about 3 weeks. So I kind of wanted to die, yeah, in that little bit. So now I'm just sort of over that hump, and I'm ready to get back to real life and actually interact with people and occasionally open up my messages and not see 1,000 of them piled up and then just have to mark them all as read. So that's really what I'm looking forward to. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Andrew's stuff get out in the wild and maybe start trying to do some deployments with that stuff. It sounds really cool.
Is there a beta testing program for that, Andrew? Sorry for interrupting.
No.
What was that?
There is.
Program?
There is. So I've been working with a couple of small resellers at the moment. If you're interested, get in touch with me and I can get something set up for you. Basically, at this point, we've got all the features required to run a regularized MP. It's just trying to get details from people on what's required in their region. So in Australia, we have to do data retention things now. I know in the US, you guys need to do that CalA or whatever it is, recording. So making sure that that's all available for each region and that we're covering all that. So that's the idea of the next couple of weeks.
All right, very cool. All right, so...
Yeah,
for sure. Let's do the official sign-off, and then before we all say goodbye, definitely all of you guys keep emailing us. Email Mom over there, Mommy Hammett, because she stays on top of everything and make sure we all keep our crap together, and he's the one who hassles me all the time about making sure we get all this done. So definitely keep watching, keep giving us ideas, keep listening to Tom rant, and... from me, I'm going to say bye. You guys? All right.
Let's vote Donald Trump.